Hello and welcome to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on 1170 SEN. On Tuesday, NRL head of football Graham Annesley joined us to discuss the looming start of the season in the face of another COVID-affected year.
Welcome back. 0457 736 736 is the text line. Got plenty of your texts to get through, but let's turn our attention to rugby league. Now, there's still 51 days to go until the start of the season proper, but obviously we kick off much earlier than that. It sounds like a long time, but that means there's a long time for things to change. On the line is the NRL's head of football, Graham Annesley, who I want to have a good chat with this morning. Graham, thanks for your time.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. Happy New Year to you. Hope you had a good rest and you're probably back into the swing of things. I wanted to focus in particular on something that the game has already dealt with over the last couple of years, but finds itself in another position to deal with again. And it's the latest strain, it's Omicron. So can we kind of try and break down, mate, if we can, how the game is approaching this different strain with so much COVID now in the community?
Yeah, look, it's certainly a different environment for us going into 2022 than it was in either 21 or 20. I think, generally speaking, over the last 2 years, our approach has been about trying to eliminate COVID from the competition, keep it out of the competition, and continue operating as per normal. And that's reflected in government policy. As we know, state governments have closed borders and tried to keep the virus out. With Omicron, of course, it's now widespread in the community. Just about everyone that you know has been in contact with it in some way. If you've avoided it to this point, you've been pretty lucky. But that's going to create some challenges for us this year because it is going to be in and around our clubs. And so we're moving from an elimination strategy to more of a management strategy and trying to identify those that have got it before they actually enter the club environment and keep them isolated so that they don't spread it to others.
So does that change then the protocols that the players and staff and clubs will have to be under, or do the protocols remain the same and you look to other ways of trying to maintain the position that you're in?
Yeah, look, they have changed. We've had players in bubbles over the last 2 years, as everyone knows, that, you know, they've been very tightly controlled and they've literally had to, you know, live in each other's pockets and not operate in the community like most of us are able to do on a daily basis. Now, that's not the situation at the moment. Over the course of the summer months, the protocols have been relaxed and players have been able to get back to what we would consider to be relatively normal lifestyles. We haven't reintroduced some protocols, but certainly nowhere near as heavy as last year. And we are also combining that with a testing regime, which we haven't been able to do in the past. So now each day when players turn up for training, they have to undergo a rapid test. It's a rapid test in a controlled environment. We have people who oversee the testing to give us a much better chance of picking up players that are infected before they enter the group. They're kept separate from other players while they're tested, and about 15 minutes later each morning they get their test result, and if they're negative they're able to just carry on a normal day. If they're positive, of course, they go and isolate as every other member of the community would.
An extraordinary set of circumstances. Like you say, the focus over the last 2 years, Graham, has been keeping it out, not, you know, bubbles and let's just keep this thing out. Now you're going to have to learn to live with it. So we had this situation where it felt like if one player had COVID, the whole tournament, the whole competition could stop and you would have been looking at those numbers. Are you getting numbers as the head body from each clubs as to how many of your players have been infected with the latest strain, or is it a club by club basis?
No, part of the testing that we've introduced is a recording mechanism. So our results go into a device that records the results on a daily basis, and those results are forwarded to our medical advisors. So we are able to keep a handle on how it's going. And you know, it's no secret that over the, well, since just prior to Christmas, a number of our clubs have been pretty heavily affected. So thankfully we're in the off season, and it's giving us a bit of time to come to terms with this, and hopefully the wave starts to wane as we get closer to playing games. But our protection is primarily around our testing regime, and of course the players taking some sensible precautions to try and minimise the risk of them picking it up.
Can I ask you a what-if question? So I understood that Trent Robinson was on this station, I think, last week on Breakfast, and he mentioned to Jimmy that I think 75% of his squad had caught the disease and had, you know, obviously recovered through it. If we were in the position right now of playing the competition and you had a club come to you saying 75% of our players have COVID, what happens next?
Well, our primary objective, Matt, is to continue playing. You know, we're not in a position and don't want to be in a position where we have to look at postponement or cancellation of games. I mean, that has massive consequences for our entire economic environment that we operate in. You know, not only in terms of fans and people who have bought tickets to games and season tickets, but, you know, our broadcast partners, players' salaries, our total revenue stream. So our primary objective is to continue playing, and that's why we've got such a strict testing regime. We will lose players, as we have done over the last month or so. So hopefully, but if we can minimise those losses, then you know, clubs will be affected only to a much smaller degree. But our primary objective is to keep the competition going, and competition continuity is everything for us.
And just a final one, from a fan's perspective, we don't know what's going to unfold in the next 50 days before we get to the season proper. But what do you think season 2022 looks like from a fan's perspective at the games?
Well, I mean, it is a difficult question to answer because these things change so quickly. Omicron wasn't even heard of little more than a month ago, and you know, now it's the primary version of the virus and the most contagious version of the virus that we've seen over the last 2 years. So, you know, so much depends on future variants, whether Omicron starts to wane and starts to drop off, whether the pandemic converts to more of an endemic situation, where, you know, similar to the flu, where if you're sick, you know, you stay away and you come back when you feel better. You know, that's ultimately where I think everyone assumes we're heading with coronavirus generally. So clubs have always had to manage that situation when we've had bad flu seasons. Clubs have always had to make sure that they stay on top of any player that might have any kind of symptoms of coming down with some sort of flu, so that the flu doesn't run through their club. And clubs have always been liable to lose players because of that in the winter season. So Omicron is a little more contagious than that. So the chances of it happening are probably greater. But just as clubs have to struggle through seasons because of injuries, any type of injuries, and often the teams that are still standing when we get to grand final day are the ones that have had the better run throughout the season with injuries. It could be that in 2022, the last teams left standing are the ones that have had the better run with this disease.
Yeah. Good on you, Graham. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, mate.
Back after this.
Wednesday, the Sydney Morning Herald's Andrew Webster was back in studio as we discussed the future of Australian cricket coach Justin Langer.
The talk around Justin Langer. Now, I touched on this yesterday. You've written an article this morning, which I've highlighted the bejesus out of, by the way, because you make really good points. And it's under the headline, a win-lose situation, Langer doesn't deserve the sack. And you just asked the question, why? Why are the drums still beating about Justin Langer?
Can you hear the drums, Fernando? Mm. I asked that question. Can you?
Yeah, well, you can. I mean, Justin Langer's talking about it himself.
Well, this is the thing. So, in August last year, when this was at its height, this anti-Langer sentiment, and was driven by senior players who were leaking like a sieve. They were told not to leak about it, and then there was a leaking of the story, a leaking about them being told not to leak. Like, that's how leaky the Australian cricket team was in August last year. And it was all about Langer having too much control, and we all know about what happened and about how the players had to front him and say, you're a control freak, stop micromanaging us. So he took a step back, and he changed. And I've got a text here from him that I've quoted in the Herald today, because I wrote about this in August, and he said, "It's time for me to take ownership of this situation, mate. That's my commitment." So he did. He took ownership by giving ownership back to the players. He took a step back. They won the 2020 World Cup for the first time. They've routed England 4-0 in an Ashes series. It could have been 5-0 with one, if they get one more wicket in Sydney. What more was the bloke supposed to do? They asked him to change. He changed. They win everything that's in front of them. They've lost two matches, two group matches at the World Cup. What more do they want? And they're still not happy. So I actually made some calls yesterday to find out whether just how unhappy these senior players were with Justin Langer. And it's true. There's some of them that just don't think he should be renewed past the Pakistan tour. I think it's very dangerous if the Cricket Australia board start listening to the players and letting them determine everything that happens with their side. Take ownership of it. It's different to a football club. It's different to most national teams, where the captain should be the dominant figure, like Pat Cummins has, just by automatically, by default, because he took over from Tim Payne on the eve of the Ashes. But I don't think the inmates should be running the song.
The fascinating thing, and you well know this about sport, is that if you're leaking, you're often losing, and it never really ends well. So they were leaking, like you say, like a sieve, and somehow have managed to turn it into a winning situation, which is even more bizarre. The other part about this is that the coach himself is now starting to speak out. On 6PR over there in Perth yesterday, this was Justin Langer addressing the question of what you ask. Why are the drums still beating?
I swear to God, I wish I knew. And that's the crazy. I mean, imagine if the Wallabies coach won the Bledisloe Cup and then the World Cup in 6 months. So yeah, that's the frustration of it. I wish I could tell you, and that's the truth. I think from 4 years ago when I started, right through to now, like I said, I can only be judged on where Australian cricket was when I took over, because that's just the obvious time to where it is today. So that's what I get judged on, and that's okay. And whatever happens, I'm really, really proud, and so are my family, and so are my friends, and so are so many people I know. I think a lot of Australians are, to be honest, of where the Australian cricket team is now. So whatever happens, I'm really very, very proud of that.
So Justin Langer's saying, look at the scoreboard.
Well, that's basically what I've written today. So he followed me in. but he's right. I do disagree with him talking about making the analogy with the Wallabies, and we talked about this off-air earlier. It's a different dynamic. The coach of the Australian cricket team is different to the coach of the Wallabies. It's different to a coach of an AFL or NRL team. And I think that's a criticism of him too, that he definitely he sees things like an AFL club.
Yeah.
Like it's the West Coast Eagles. Look where he's from.
Where
he's very close to. Was he a board member?
Not sure, but he's definitely got close ties with coaching staff there and players.
But the thing is, when he took over from Darren Lehman 4 years ago, Australian cricket was in a different position. It needed a strong voice so that what happened at Newlands never happens again. So it needed that strong leader, but he hasn't necessarily changed as the team has changed and as it's improved and as it's learned from the mistakes of what happened in South Africa during the sandpaper saga. But he did change. He did change in August last year. He stepped back and they've won. So I don't know what more he could have done. I actually feel a bit of empathy for the guy.
Do you think he'll be there for Pakistan?
I wouldn't want to try and guess what the Cricket Australia board's going to do, but it seems to me that I know he also talked in that interview about not being able to split up the positions. I think they're definitely looking at that, splitting up the roles between the three different formats of the game.
But we've been down that road before. 0457 736 736. A couple of things still hanging out. There is Lance Armstrong's fall from grace on this day officially back in 2013 when he fessed up to Oprah, the biggest fall from grace in sport you can think of. A couple of contenders on the text line: Tiger, Ben Johnson, Marion Jones,
Cronje.
Let us know your thoughts on that one. And are you any closer to solving the mystery of Luke Longley and Olivia Newton-John? One of our listeners says it's a well-known fact that Luke Longley's middle name is Xanadu. That's not it. Back after the news.
Thursday, Rugby League Players Association CEO Clint Newton joined Manny to discuss the number of unvaccinated players left in the competition, planning for the 2022 season, and what they want to achieve from this year's collective bargaining agreement.
But let's start with some rugby league. First off the bat, the Rugby League Players Association CEO Clint Newton is on the phone with us this morning. G'day, Clint. Good to talk to you for a new year. A lot ahead of you, mate. Can I start with COVID first up? We're trying to get a handle on what the game looks like going forward under Omicron. Can you give us a snapshot from a player's perspective?
Yeah, good morning, Matt. Thanks for having me on. I think realistically, what players are looking for is they want to be educated on the safest possible choices to make in the community. I think what we've seen is the community is learning to live with COVID and coexist, and the players are looking to do the same. I think one of the great success stories that we had throughout 2021 was that without a mandate that we had about, over 98% of players rolled up their sleeves, got vaccinated, which is higher rate than any state and territory in the country. So what we're looking for now really is to get to the table with the NRL and work through some of the challenges, with all the stakeholders, particularly clubs and the players and the NRL, discuss the risks and solve the problems collaboratively, because it is going to be a challenging year. But we've seen many codes throughout the world get through it. And I have no doubt we'll get through it, just like we did in 2020 when the game shut down.
So we've seen some clubs come out and say, look, a third of our players, 75% of our players have had it or have it or are recovering from it. Across the board, we don't really know the exact number of players who've been affected by COVID. But it appears as though there's quite a few. So, Clint, if the competition was starting this weekend, would you have enough players to field an entire squad across all games required?
Well, fortunately enough, we're not starting this weekend. so that's a good thing. We don't have to make that decision. I think what we've done is that, given the fact that players have contracted it and staff and many people in the community, players are rebounding and they will be, available for trials and for the season. Again, it's not without some risks. Obviously, the NRL have developed a return to training and playing mandate, which we're certainly supportive of, to make sure that we're monitoring players that have had COVID and making sure that they're returning as safely as possible. But I think that, again, what we've seen in other codes around the world is that there's different ways to manage it. Yes, if matches are postponed, we'll have to work through that. But it also comes down to, what the government mandates are around isolation periods for people that have COVID. So at the moment, obviously, it's a 7-day quarantining. But if in the event that changes, then obviously that changes the level of challenge and risk associated with the season.
What about the situation with those players that remain unvaccinated? Now, we've got a couple of high-profile names, Jason Taumalolo, Nelson Asifer, Solomona. What's the situation with them? And what's your view from a players' association perspective of those who remain unvaccinated?
Well, obviously, as I said to begin with, the positive thing is that for the whole game is we're in single figures. And for different reasons, players have chosen not to be vaccinated. I think one of the key things here is that without a mandate, we've got nearly 99% of players have got vaccinated. Mm. Now, those players that remain unvaccinated, there's a framework in place for clubs to work through, and players are aware of that and their agents. But again, it's going to largely depend on state government regulations and also stadia restrictions that are in place. So again, we're hopeful that players will work through that. We're still optimistic about ensuring that we don't see any other players exit the NRL. We certainly think that would be, a real shame for everyone, given the fact that I think we can get through it. But I think that's still a work in progress with some of the players.
I want to talk to you about the collective bargaining agreement in just a sec, but on a broader sense, Clint, as you look ahead to 2022, and let's just push aside COVID at the moment, Can you see any other major issues that you would want to raise first up before you head into this season on behalf of your players?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we've obviously been, you know, speaking about, particularly over the last couple of years, and ironically, we did it very well in 2020 at the beginning when the Apollo Committee was brought together, is having a seat at the table and making sure that, you know, we've got an ability to be properly consulted and work through matters, particularly in areas that impact on the players. I think that if it requires us to bring the table and chairs, then we will. But we players need a voice. The RLPA is the only independent body advocating for all professional rugby league players, male and female, and we're essential, to functioning and on a fair game on and off the field. So I think that is the main one. Outside of that, we're really optimistic about the 2022 season. We make no apologies about the fact that we want to secure the best terms and conditions in Australian sport. We certainly believe that that Peter leading the game certainly would champion that as well, given the fact that we've got such an incredible group of male and female players playing our game. We've got to set it up to make sure that we are the sport of choice for boys and girls in this country, and we'll certainly advocate hard for that.
I got a question on the text line from one of my listeners, Matt from Hunters Hill, who wants to know if you've been given any feedback about any COVID positive players returning to training who've noticed reduced performance and damage to lungs, etc. Is there any of that medical kind of feedback coming back to you?
Now, what we've seen, and obviously, again, the clubs have been incredibly diligent with how they've managed extremely challenging circumstances over the last couple of years. They've had to shoulder a significant amount of responsibility. What we're seeing is there's varying impacts on players. We're seeing some people, a big portion of players that are asymptomatic, that are getting picked up by the daily rapid antigen testing that's going on in club land. So, and that's no different to the community. We're also seeing different players not respond as well. But again, their return to training and playing is something that has been put down, and there's some guidelines in place for that. But yes, there are some challenges with it. But again, we're certainly optimistic about the fact that none of the players will be severely impacted to a point that they won't be able to take the field this year.
And I mentioned the CBA, so the collective bargaining agreement for NRL and NRLW players expires this year. When do those discussions start to take place, and how difficult do you think it will be, or do you think that it's going to be a pretty regulation process?
Yeah, again, I'm an optimist, Matt. I'd like to think that it's going to be it's not going to be overly challenging for all of us. I think that if we all come to the table with the right frame of mind, and like I said before, is that we want to make rugby league the sport of choice. Based on the best terms and conditions that we can secure for the male and female players, that, without sacrificing those best terms and conditions for the players, we hope to have the CBA negotiations wrapped up by the middle of 2022. I don't see any reason why it has to drag on. Historically, it's gone on for quite some time. But I do believe that the game owes it to itself to get, come together, work through it. The game is in a strong position financially. Clubs are in a strong position. The game has kept their cost base low, which is great. And we should all come together and get aligned and really give the players and the future generations what we're looking to achieve.
Well, it's been a tough couple of years already and another difficult one ahead of us. But I think if anything, rugby league has shown amongst the players, amongst headquarters, amongst your organisation, that when you get all together, you can push through the whole lot. So we look forward to speaking to you more often throughout the season. I'm sure plenty's going to come up, mate. So we'll have plenty of time to chat throughout the season. And thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Should be a great season. I'm incredibly excited about the women's competition that's due to kick off in February. I think that's going to be a sensational way to start the season. So we're looking forward to that one, as well as wrapping up the CBA for them.
Absolutely. Good on you, Clint. Rugby League Players Association CEO Clint Newton. The NRLW series gets underway February 27, so that rescheduled competition is set to begin there, and then the NRL season on March 10. So let's hope that the game just keeps on pushing through. We will take a break. 0457 736 736. You've lit up the scoreboard this morning on my quiz question of the day. So I've gone back to 1980. And the reason why, because on this day in 1980, US President Jimmy Carter said, we're not going to the Moscow Olympic Games. Now, for those of us that remember all of that, I do remember what then happened. Australia went, and like I said, we won gold in the 4x100, the mean machine. Neil Brooks comes charging home, and I've posed the question to you, what was said after this great call from Norman May?
Here come the Australian girls, 5 metres, 4, 3, 2, 1.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What was said next? Well, you've already had your say on the text line. I'll give you the answer after this.
And on Friday, Sydney Sixers all-rounder Dan Christian previewed this weekend's final against the Perth Scorchers and shared his frustration with Steve Smith not being allowed to play for the team.
There you go. That's the way to get into a freaky Friday. But first up, of course, BBL, the Sydney Sixers into the qualifying final, as we know, against the Perth Scorchers tomorrow. And a win here will see them go straight into the final. On the line, I'm pleased to say, is Dan Christian, superstar, of course, all-rounders from the Sixers. Dan, welcome to the program.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
How are you feeling? You must be pretty pumped about what's ahead.
Yeah, we are. We've... pretty excited to be finishing in that top two. I don't think we've been playing anywhere near our best cricket, but yeah, so it's pretty exciting for us to know that we're still up there and still being extremely competitive.
It's an interesting one that you say about, you know, not reaching your peak at the moment, not playing your best cricket. I guess there's two ways of looking at that, Dan, isn't there? There's the regular season, so you can pause and refresh, and possibly you've got the best ahead of you at the right time.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the way we're trying to look at it. I feel like we've been doing a lot of really good things in majority of our games. I mean, I suppose that's why we've ended up finishing second. We've had a lot of our batsmen have been able to contribute in most of the games, or nearly every game, and the bowlers have been bowling pretty well. We just haven't been able to do it all together in every game. So, the exciting thing for us, I think, is that, we've still got that ahead of us. We feel like we do anyway.
Do you think that might be a reason behind, or the reason behind that might be something?